Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the world of Women Create. Thank you for joining us today. I'm here with Paula Wilner, the Crafty Lass. Paula is a multi-crafter, tutor, sewist, illustrator, and designer from Northamptonshire, United Kingdom. In 2015, Paula established the Crafty Lass with the aim to inspire adults to get creative in their busy lives, and she has gone on to work with some of the biggest names across the craft industry. Her hand-drawn, nature-inspired fabric ranges and hand-carved wood block designs can be found for sale across the UK. She is a brand ambassador for Brother Sewing Machines, part of the UK cricket crew, and her first book, Simple Paper Flowers, will be published at the end of September. Welcome, Paula.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's so wonderful to finally have a chance to talk to you.
Thank you, likewise.
You know, a lot has gone on in your life this year. We're thrilled to be featuring your story in our winter issue of What Women Create. And I know firsthand how busy your schedule is. So thank you for making the time to be with us. So I want to just get right into it. You know, I want to know, you said that you went from having a corporate 9-to-5 job to becoming a craft brand in 2015. How did it all come about? How did the Crafty Lass begin?
Well, as I say, I used to be in the corporate world. I used to have a 9-to-5 job, very numbers focused. It had its creative elements, but it just wasn't really what I wanted to do. And there just came a point where after I got married, I'd done an awful lot of craft stuff for the wedding. So many of my friends and family were saying, you've got to do something more creative. You need to be doing stuff yourself. You know, there's got to be somehow, you know, there's got to be a way. And I don't know if you've ever had a particularly bad day at work, but I just got to the point one day and I literally quit. I just handed my notice in literally that day. And it was that weekend. It was a Friday afternoon. And over the weekend, I'd set up the Crafty Lass website. I didn't even know fully what I was going to do, but it was just a pivotal moment where I just, something had to change. And yeah, and lots of people said I was silly. I was leaving a 9-to-5 role with stability. But I just knew I'd somehow make it work. Obviously got lovely supportive family. And I'm not, you know, I'd love to have been able to say, right, that's it, not working. Then I had no income. I did manage to get my role back down to a part-time position. So I handed my notice in. They said, well, don't leave. We do actually need someone. So I managed to go down to just a couple of days a week, which gave me a little bit of income and let me try and establish the Crafty Lass on the other days.
So how long did you do both your part-time job and establish a business? When did you pivot over and have full-time the Crafty Lass?
Well, it was kind of a bit of a funny situation because I didn't really know. I knew I wanted to teach adults. I knew that there was definite need, in particularly in working environments. People are a bit stressed. Craft can offer so much benefit to people in their spare time. Learning new skills can be quite therapeutic. I wanted to really offer that, but I also know that I needed to think about a proper game plan, like how am I going to do that. So having the 2 days a week, I tried to do the Crafty Lass stuff on the other days, but then I saw the opportunity to actually go and work with a shopping TV channel in London that was launching called The Craft Channel. And I didn't know how I was going to get involved, but I wanted to see what they're up to. I basically sent them a tweet on Twitter, as it was then, how can I get involved? I was invited down to do a little chat. I didn't know what I was going into, but I was auditioned on the spot to do the on-air guest demonstrating. And I've only been there a couple of hours. They offered me a junior buying role in the craft team. So then I was doing 2 days a week in my old job. I was doing 3 days a week in London as a craft buyer and prepping for TV shows and trying to establish the Crafty Lass. And that went on for a little while. That was quite chaotic, managing lots of different things. 7 day a week sort of working environment.
How far are you from London?
It was about an hour and a quarter on a good commute through. It felt like a long way at the time. I know in the US, the driving is much bigger, but that did feel a really long way because it was also long hours. But then it just got to the point where I just couldn't do everything. So I did leave my old role and stuck with the London craft buying. And then on the other days, worked on what I was going to be pursuing with the Crafty Lass. And the great thing about that opportunity is whilst I didn't stay there for a huge amount of time, it was fantastic for networking. I met all the craft wholesalers that would help me, but also just connections and some of those people I'm still in contact with today that I would never have had that opportunity. And it threw me into a whole new world of shopping TV, guest demonstrating, teaching adults primarily. But instead of it being in workshop environment, it was just via the medium of television.
So I'm trying to picture this. So you were going on and you were demonstrating how to create something live on TV. And so were you the one who was coming up with the ideas, or did they say, hey, today we would like you to, you know, sew a basic pillow? Or
well, because I was in the buying team, I was sort of responsible with the rest of the team to come up with things and work with suppliers to build like shows, essentially. So what products would be on air, and then it would be up to myself to work out, and lots of other guest demonstrators after they, but different people would work out how can we best advertise the product, I guess, because it was a sales-led thing. But you had one presenter that was doing the whole, this is $9.99, you know, get it while it's hot, that kind of selling side of shopping TV, whereas I was able to actually be, you know, honest and demonstrate and show what you could do with the product. So it's like mini workshops, essentially, but with a bit of a sales edge. That was kind of how it was.
How did you have that comfort on camera? I mean, that could be intimidating, especially when you're actually showing steps and, you know, imparting a bunch of information. Where did that confidence come from?
Well, I mean, I used to do quite a lot of like theatre when I was younger. Used to do like drama groups, that kind of thing. I think it was intimidating at times because you are live on air, and if you make a mistake, the funny thing is actually, if you make a mistake, it just shows that everyone's like human. And if these people at home make mistakes, you have to show how to rectify it, you know? So it's just one of those things, just being really open, being really honest. And if something goes wrong, just say it. Yes. And then you have to sort of work around it. But yeah, I mean, there were times where that was more of a challenge than others, but it was great. It was great fun. It was hard work, but it was fun.
It sounds wonderful. And I'm wondering, could you in real time, like when you were on demonstrating something, could they see like sales increase?
Yeah. And I don't obviously do so much shopping TV in that sort of environment so much now. I still do go and demonstrate on shopping TV when my fabric range is launched or I'm working with a specific project. And yeah, you're right. If you demonstrate clearly why that product is the best thing right now to get, yeah, of course the sales increase. But yeah, it was nice that I wasn't necessarily, I could be honest, you know, I could demonstrate. I'm not somebody that can sell something I don't feel passionate about. So as I was in the buying team, I could always source good, relevant, you know, just a good quality craft.
I haven't asked you this yet, but I'd love to talk about your name. I remember the first time somebody mentioned the Crafty Lass to me. You know, a little bit of time passed and I don't know that I remembered Paula, but I remembered the Crafty Lass. And your name is a registered trademark, is it not?
It is. It's a registered trademark. And that's something I set up really early on in the business. I don't know why, but I just have, I've always had this ability to sort of like forward plan, and that is meant to be. I had to somehow sort out a trademark. I felt it was a risk at the time because you have to spend money to trademark, but actually it was the right decision, because I've had several times where other the craft glasses appear and I've had to say I'm really sorry, but you can't use it, which is not ideal, but anyway, I'm glad you think it's a strong name.
It's a strong name, and I want to know, was it just a natural, or did you have to spend some time coming up with it?
There was a few other names that were banded around, but to be honest, it was genuinely almost instant. So my husband is from Yorkshire in the UK, and Yorkshire girls are lasses, and he's my lad. And that's always been the case. I've always been his lass. And the Crafty Lass, it just had a ring to it. And that was it. I mean, say it was literally, I handed my notice in, and it was by the Monday morning, I was the Crafty Lass.
Wow, so. That's a great story. Now, speaking of your husband, I want to back up a minute. I'm intrigued by what you said, that it, when you were creating so many of the favors and the decor for your wedding, give me a sample, an example of some of the things you were doing. And that had to have been a lot of work. You're already getting ready for your own wedding and you're sort of your own party planner, right?
Yeah, I think my husband won't mind me saying this, I really went to town with our wedding. I don't know whether it was a wedding or a year-long craft project. Was it about the wedding or was it about the craft project? No, we've been together a really long time. We've been together 10 years before we got married. So he knew that I was going to want to make lots of things for it. But so, for example, whilst I did have real flowers for my wedding bouquet, the rest of the wedding, so the corsages, like the buttonholes, the table decor, the bridesmaid in their hair, I hand sewed all the flowers out of fabric. Which I've still got the fabric flowers from the wedding, bunting, just like lots of personalized details. There was all sorts of different crafty things. I mean, our aisle, walking up the aisle, there was on every chair as you go up the aisle was a different huge fabric flower with ribbons flowing it, so it was like a rainbow of flowers as you walked up the aisle. It was a long time ago now, but yeah.
So every night in the year leading up to your wedding, you were basically working on something, right?
Every night. It got to a point where I was like, I'm going to have to do four flowers every night. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Oh my God. So your craftiness, I am guessing your craftiness goes back to when you were a child, probably, right? You've been crafty your life.
Yeah, I can't remember not being crafty. My mum and my dad have always been really supportive of pushing my creativity. I can always remember, you know, like pots of paint and just junk modelling, you know, like cardboard and making things. And we had this incredible, like a haberdashery, like a small craft shop. And I loved going there. I don't think it's still there, sadly, but there was just like this feeling of walking into this shop with my pocket money and there'd be beads and ribbons and craft kits. And I'd always, you know, that would keep me occupied, I guess, for hours.
And it's wonderful your parents indulged it. It's really nice that they.
Yeah. And they still do. They love seeing everything that I'm making and doing. It's been lovely to have that support from day one.
So I know that you are involved in a lot of different collaborations. I'd love to speak to some of these, including your fabric ranges. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, the fabric range was definitely not something that I had, you know, it's beyond my wildest dreams, to be honest, to work in fabric, to have my own fabric ranges under the Crafty Lass brand as well. I went on to study printed textile design for my degree. But when I left, as I say, I went more into the corporate world. And when I started out the Crafty Lass, it was obviously more about teaching. The fabric came around, I want to say by chance, but it was, I don't think the business would have gone in the direction without the global pandemic of COVID. Obviously, it was a horrific time for so many people and for so many reasons. And I feel somehow a bit of guilt that there was any positivity out of such a difficult time. But it did it forced lots of people to do different things, didn't they, in the way they worked and the way they managed their life, I guess. I was no longer teaching workshops, so I was at home just with my two boys. I've got two young boys. I was technically on maternity leave, but I kind of get the feeling you understand. I don't ever stop. I craft.
No, you don't relax.
No, there was a maternity leave of sorts, but the one thing I did to relax, because we couldn't really go anywhere or do anything, was I just started to draw a lot of flowers. And it's funny because I'd never really drawn nature or flowers before COVID. When I was at university doing printed textile design, I was much more like graphical shapes, repeating shapes, like nothing naturally drawn. So I can't answer why. I just thought one day I decided to invest in some nice fine liners and some nice alcohol ink markers and just draw. And it was almost from that moment on, it was like every evening, and I built up this huge portfolio of all these flowers and other nature, but predominantly flowers. And I was already working with Craft Cotton Company, who are the fabric company, or Visage Textiles is their official name, as a blogger. I was sort of working with them on tutorials, how to use fabric to make different things for the home and what have you. And I just sort of bit the bullet and asked if they would be interested in having a look at my drawings, and they were. And I drove up to Manchester in the United Kingdom when we were allowed, because it was all a bit hit and miss as to what we were allowed to do for a while. And we had this meeting, and I couldn't believe it. I walked away knowing I was going to have my first fabric range, and I definitely didn't take that for granted. That felt like such a pivot in the craft for us. Like world, I was suddenly going to be undoing product, and again going back to the trademark, that was suddenly then really important, because my brand was going to be out there in a way that I had dreamed of, but you know, it was suddenly happening. And I've just announced my seventh range that will be out early 2025.
Paula, I know you do all different kinds of crafts, and it seems like you're constantly coming up with new ideas and new products. Do you ever become creatively stuck?
I do, actually. And I find it really difficult when I do get into that zone, because, you know, everyone, if you want to get creative, you just want to do it, don't you? Like, but actually, if you can't think how or why. But I do think the fact that I'm a multi-crafter does help, because I might get stuck with sewing, for example, like, oh, I'm not sure what to do. Then I might do drawing, or I might switch to fabric flowers or paper flowers. I mean, there's a lot of flowers at the minute, but I do think that helps to keep the variety going. As I say, there's been times in the craft alas where I've completely not known, I haven't got anything on my list. I don't know how I'm going to push this forwards. And again, it is just taking a deep breath, looking back at my original, why I set up the business, what I want to do, what would I really be realistically able to achieve? Because obviously I've got to balance things around the boys. And it's just a case of, going back to that original why, and also doing things for myself.
You know, in my brief time knowing you, I've really gathered that you're highly organized. And I'm thinking about this because you do have two young sons. They're both under age 10, correct?
They're both 7 and 5.
Okay. And you're doing all these initiatives. Tell me how you manage your time. I'm so curious.
I haven't mentioned this to you before, and you might have seen. My two boys are also diagnosed as autistic. Mm-hmm. So we have our challenges. What I would say, and obviously I love them dearly, if you've been in that scenario, you'll understand it does have its challenges. But I would say that craft is also my calm. So I think the one thing that I find amazing about doing this is I don't feel like I work. I'm very lucky. I don't think, and I definitely, as I don't take that for granted either, that I get to do what I love every day. And because I'm self-employed, and obviously there are deadlines and I have meetings and record podcasts such as this, where I have to stick to the time, lots of the other things I work on can be quite flexible. I do work on an evening. I will be catching an hour here, an hour there, getting what I can done. And there are pinch points where if I've got too many things going on, I can get quite stressed. But I don't know. I've always found like organizing my time with lists and just, I don't know, it's been something that I just thrive on, actually.
Well, and loving what you do, and the fact that you're always creating something new. So you see the progression and you see the fruits of your labors.
I've always got a bit of a list system going on. I've got a list of like what I need to do right now, like that has to get done today. I might have a longer plan, one that this has to get done like this month. But I'll always have on the list my bigger dreams, my bigger plans. It's like, you know, and the big dreams are on there. They're just on the to-do list. And then when I feel like it's all getting a bit chaotic, I'll turn the page, I'll write a new list, but they'll go on the list as well because they're still there. So I'm always like, it's a manifesting thing, isn't it? Sure. If they're there, they might happen at some point if I just keep going.
Yeah. And you're saying this isn't a hard copy notebook. This is not a computer Excel list. This is something
no.
down.
With a pen.
Yes. Okay.
Cup of tea, my list, and my nice fine liner. And it sounds ridiculous. I know when I need to write a new list because it's all getting a bit messy. I feel a little bit, I don't know, fuzzy and I can't concentrate. So I'm like, right, it's time for a new list. Sit down, focus, write it all out again. And then I can go on with the next task.
Well, and I'm guessing that like many people, the way many people keep their journals, do you keep your list so you can look back at the progression?
It's actually in a diary. So as in like, but it might be that I won't stick to the day, but in that week I'll write, I'll just write all over it. So when I flick back, I'll always look back at the old ones. And it is quite, I do regularly do this, look back to see what have I done since I last wrote the list. And think, oh yeah, I've achieved that, great. And that's actually really motivating to think, oh, you might feel overwhelmed because there's a lot going on, but actually you didn't think it was possible 2 weeks ago and you've done it now. So on with the next task.
Well, and I know with your book, I know that that was like a dream come true to you, right? I mean, dream come true for you. And so I'm guessing that some of those big, big plans you've already accomplished or big goals.
Yeah, do you know, maybe I'll dig out I probably do still have some of my old diaries. It'd be interesting to look about on my to-do list, my very first ones. I'm going to do that later. Because actually, you're right. I think the thing is that I've always dreamed big and I've never necessarily known how or what the journey would be to get to that point. But I have always held the vision that if I just keep going, it will happen. I don't know how, and I don't, you know, I've a little bit of believer in fate sometimes, but I also feel like you do make your own luck as well. You've got to just ask the right people, not be scared. And if you get rejected, you have to just try again.
So you mentioned bringing up your drawings for the fabric line. As an ambassador and when you're a spokesperson, do you approach companies or do they come to you?
So when I approached, I was already working with the Craft Cotton Company and they initially asked me about being a blogger. I was simply a customer of theirs. I bought fabric. We got chatting about how I'd like to do tutorials and it just made natural sense. Yeah. Obviously, I then approached them about my drawings. But since then, it's sort of been a bit of a mix, to be honest. Sometimes I think, oh, well, that would be a really good fit for the brand and what have you. Cricut approached me and Brother approached me. So yeah, it's kind of just a real mix. But there have been times where I'll reach out to people and just say, oh, it'd be great to work together. And even if it's not now, maybe it would be in like, you know, a couple of years' time. But if you've made that connection, definitely helps to have had that conversation.
I know you're a big name in the UK. How is your reach in the United States? Do you ever come here and do appearances or go to trade shows or how are you at, you know, the sort of household name recognition here?
I don't know. I was quite surprised when you said that you'd heard of the Craft Cotton Lounge in America. Yeah. So I was like, wow, it's spreading. If I'm honest, having the two aforementioned young boys, I don't tend to do too much travel. So I haven't been to America for a very long time. I have been a long time ago. But no, it doesn't necessarily mean it's not on the list. No.
I hope you do come soon. I absolutely yeah. hope. I have seen some photos of your workspace, and I am very curious to know about it. It looks like it's a very an older building. I was trying to figure out if it's a basement level. Tell me where your workspace is located.
Okay, so obviously, when I first set up the Crafty Lass, I was just in our very small spare room. I had just my desk, and that was it. But to teach people, I knew I could rent spaces, and I did. I've quite often gone to village halls and taught in like public houses, even and schools and people's workplaces. But I really did want on the list was to have somewhere a dedicated space to be able to teach. And when we had Freddie, who's my oldest, and he was about 5 months old at the time, we found a house out in the countryside, and we'd always wanted to move a bit further out, where somewhere nice to bring up children. And when I found this house for sale that we're in now, they had this fabulous outbuilding, and I immediately was like, this is the space. I just knew. So yeah, it is a very old building, and I'm sat in it now recording this. It's a bit rough and ready. It's not your beautifully painted space, but it is perfect for what I need, because I wanted somewhere that people could come in, sit down, and not feel like they can't make a mess. Because that's part of craft, isn't it? And they don't have to clear it up afterwards. I wanted people to just come in and feel instantly like, oh, I can get creative in here. And I've got everything out. You've got ribbons and fabric and papers and everything. And, their eyes, I used to give people like sweetie bags. Like it was like sweets, and they could collect
Goodie
everything.
bags, yeah.
So like everything's in jars, so that it's like an old-fashioned sweet shop, and they can come and help themselves with whatever they want to make. It's been a long time since I've held workshops in this space, actually. I tend to use it now more for me working in here and things like photography and tutorials and things. But it's a lovely space for me to be in and work, and those initial the seeds of the journey are all in here, it's part of the memories.
I've noticed from photos, it looks like you have really good lighting. Did you set up your own lighting in there?
Yeah, so actually, the funny thing is, there's actually no windows because it is old, and you can open. We've got some nice double doors that can open out. So some days, if I don't need consistent lighting, I can have the doors open. But the benefit of that actually is when you close it, and I've got studio lights, I can make sure the lighting stays consistent, which is really important when you're taking like a step-by-step photography. If the sunshine comes in 1 minute in the UK, then it'll be raining, and it makes a whole heap of difference for photos.
And before you moved everything in there, we had just been sort of not used for many years.
Some of the previous people had actually run a small business from here, from this specific bit. So I was really also fortunate. There's a small kitchenette area, there's a working bathroom. It was really good to go. As I say, not perfect, but perfect for what I needed.
So I saw something recently where you mentioned updating your website and creating your own e-commerce platform. And I'm just curious, was that a lot of work? Because I know a lot of our artists and makers would love to do that. They tend to go through platforms like Etsy or other ways of selling. Is it challenging to handle it all yourself? Is it secure? Was that a big deal to set it up?
I think that's you've hit the nail on the head there about secure. Obviously, going with a recognized platform is great because you know that the sort of it's on their heads to make it secure, and you've obviously got a platform that people can find you through. But there are also lots of people on those platforms, and I do think it's quite difficult to get found unless you have something specifically niche, or I don't know, it depends, doesn't it, what you're selling. But for me, I've always had a little website. From the very beginning, I just had one page. It was just a launch page. It developed into a bit of a blog, And I used to do all the WordPress and all the website stuff myself. I had to sort of do lots of Googling, like, oh, I want to add this, I don't know how, searching. But it was becoming a little bit of a messy patchwork. It worked fine and it was secure, but it just wasn't quite what I wanted it to be. And initially, when I first got my fabric ranges, it was really exciting to be able to say, well, you can go and buy it at, for us in the UK, in Hobbycraft and John Lewis. I was so proud that my brand was for sale in these big shops. And I'm still really proud of that. But there is also lots of other retailers and lots of small businesses selling my fabric. And I just suddenly had this bit of a point in my life where I was like, well, now I've got a book coming and I've got several fabric ranges. I still had stock of all the fabric. It just made total sense to actually be able to sell it for myself and say, yes, you can get it in Hobbycraft. Isn't that exciting? But actually, I've also got stock because it made sense that I can sell my own fabric ranges, get the margins on that. I basically took a bit of a sort of balanced view on it. I could have tried to set it up for myself. And I think I would have spent many a frustrated hour, and I would have worried that it wasn't secure enough if I did it myself. Even if it was saying it was, I just thought, this is one of those times where actually I need to pay someone to do it, because I don't want to be getting into trouble with money. And like, if people are going through my website and there's a problem, I just wanted to make sure it was right. So I updated my website to no longer be just a blog. And one thing I've said before for small brands and for myself is having good photography. I do have really good photography on my website. The fabulous Mark Lord, I'm going to give him a shout out, and Jenny Stewart. Those two photographers I've been very lucky to work with over the years. Mark Lord was actually our wedding photographer. We might backtrack to that. But basically, I think because I had the good photography, the actual principles of the website are quite simple. I basically just said, please replicate my website exactly as it is, but make sure it's not a messy patchwork anymore, and add in the e-commerce function. And it is secure because all the payments are taken by there securely, and I don't have to worry about that. And it's been an interesting journey for me. It's a small start thing for me. I wasn't ever setting my e-commerce shop up to be the next big shop. I just wanted to make sure that there was an outlet that people can buy my fabrics, they can buy my book, I can direct them to the projects I'm working on.
I agree. And back to the photography, something, some of the artists who submit their stories to the magazines, they've never really invested in having someone shoot their portfolio or their offerings. And can you sum up why? I personally think it's incredibly important. Why do you think it's important, Paula?
I think that it's that old phrase, isn't it? A picture speaks a thousand words. But I think if somebody, I don't know what the stat is, but isn't it something like a couple of seconds you've got to like grab someone's attention? And I think that in a small business, you can write as many words as you want explaining what you're doing. But I think that people see imagery, and if they can gather from a few quick glances what you're about, I feel like that's much more impactful. And you need to write stuff too, obviously. But I just feel like, yeah, it's really important, A, to have photographs of yourself, of the person behind the brand. I hate having my photo taken. You probably wouldn't believe that given the amount I've shown my face on social media. I am honestly the worst, where I hate it. But it's important. And, the photographers I work with know that I hate having my photo taken, and they'll remind me to smile, and they'll remind me, like, come on, you've got to do it. But then also, the crafts that you make and the things you want to sell. Obviously, you've got to have good lighting and consistency as well. So consistent styling of photography, I think, is really important. I've been, as I say, in the early days, Mark Lord was our wedding photographer. And after our wedding, and he saw all the crafts, he asked me if he could take some photographs of me for stock photography. For crafts. And so we had a couple of, about three in total, different sessions where he was able to take photographs of what I was doing and making, and he got to able to use the images.
So, I love how you said that one of your goals is to inspire adults who are busy in their everyday lives to get into crafting. How would someone who has a busy, 9-to-5 job, who maybe doesn't see themselves as being very artistic or crafty, what would you suggest? How do they sort of take this on and benefit from creating?
I think I honestly believe that everyone can be creative if they're given plenty of space and plenty of time and they're shown how. Because, as a kid, we're really encouraged to get creative all the time. Like, I'll be with my kids, say, come on, let's do this. And as adults, we don't necessarily have, or we don't think we've got the time for that. Obviously, some people might not want to, and that's fine. But if they were allowed time and patience, I do honestly think everyone can make something that they're proud of. I guess it will come down to personal taste, won't it? Some people want to sit and make paper flowers. Some people will want to do drawing. But I guess it's just experimenting and trying things. You don't know unless you try. The other day I said to my Freddie, because he loves coming into the studio, and I said, do you want to give air dry clay a go? And and he quite liked the sensory nature of the clay, and he can, play with it. He'd never really sort of given that a go before. And suddenly now all I'm hearing is, can we go and do more clay? But as an adult, it might be the same. Try something and you never know. You might love it. And I guess, I sometimes have people come to workshops. I've had this several times, actually, where someone will come along and say, oh, I love, whatever this is, I love doing this. And I've brought my friend. She's never done it before. She thinks she's rubbish. And I always have this. And the friend will be like, no, honestly, I'm not crafty, but she said I should come along. And by the end of it, the so-called, I'm inverting my rubbish friend, she's had a great time. And actually, it doesn't matter what you've made. And it doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter what anyone else thinks of what you've made. If you're proud of it and you've enjoyed making it, it doesn't matter, as long as you've had a nice time. And it's time, isn't it? Just creating.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way of putting it. Yeah, it's so your boys are both creative, I'm guessing. It sounds like they're open to experimenting and...
Yes, very much so. Yeah. Freddie is like, if it used to be quite a trend, whatever I was making, he wanted to make. So if I'm making paper flowers, he wants to make paper flowers. If I'm drawing, he wants to draw. And actually, that's still today. And we do have some really lovely moments where craft brings us all together. So I've recently also created ranges of woodblock designs. So I'm working with a company called the Indian Block Print Co. And yeah, they've created ranges of hand-carved wooden blocks to print with. And they were incredibly kind, this company. They also created Freddie his own woodblock of his drawing, so he can have his own hand-carved woodblock to print, just like Mummy. And Rupert, whilst he loves getting involved, isn't quite at the same level of craft in terms of wanting to obsessively do everything that Mummy's doing. But there are times where we're all together, all printing or all drawing, and that feels like really magical to me, that we can all just sit and create calmly together, because it does provide a crafty calm haven with my boys.
Wonderful. And that's something that they'll go to probably later in life, because they'll remember the sort of the peace and the happiness and the time they spent with you doing it.
I hope so. I mean, let's say Freddie's got his own sewing machine. Sometimes he'll get it out and be like, I want to make whatever it is, bunting. And he made a fabric notebook cover recently. And just to see, also, you can see it in his face, the pride. I made that, I made, and he'll go to bed with the cushion that he's created. And he even enters his like village shows. We got village fair shows, best in show. And he won best sewing. And, it's just great. But craft can bring that happiness to children and adults.
Absolutely. No, I love it. Your book is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
What else can you can you tease that will be happening? Anything you can tell us that's on the horizon next year or so?
Yeah, I do. I always feel like at the minute I'm having to keep lots of crafty secrets hidden. I'm quite an open person, as you've guessed, and as you've hopefully heard. So I do struggle with the not being allowed to say things. But I am working on another big project. I can't tell you what that is, but it is a big project. I have, as I say, my first Christmas fabric range is out around now-ish for Christmas 2024. And then my next range is coming out in January or early February, around that time, in the UK. And that's called the Rainbow Garden. And until now, all my ranges have been a five-piece collection. That's a sort of, I don't know, standard norm, five pieces. This one is a 10-piece collection. And it gives you a fabric print in every colour of the rainbow. So allows you to create a whole floral rainbow garden.
I
literally
it.
Can't wait.
Wow.
Yeah, very exciting.
Well, I'm hoping you can leave us. You did say how important it is to do brand photography. What other words of wisdom can you leave us with for people trying to establish their own small business?
I guess be realistic is the one thing that, you know, as I say, when I did quit my job to do it, I couldn't just quit my job and do it and make money instantly. It was a really difficult decision, and we did have to make quite a lot of, like, as I went for it as a small business, you know, we dropped down the amount of cars. You know, we had two cars and then we went to one, and we had to sacrifice things. We didn't go on holiday, and it sounds boring, but actually that's the bit, isn't it, that if you can financially make it work, you just got to try those kind of things and also be brave. Like, so many people say to me, oh, you're so confident, you ask, you just go for it. But I think you've got to go for it. If you don't ask, you don't get. And if they say no, I'm always sad, like, oh, that didn't work out or whatever. But actually, they might come back to you in 5 years and remember. You remember the crafty lass a couple of years later. And, you know, and I think it's definitely all about building connections. I don't think I've given a particularly succinct answer for that.
No, but it's a good one, though. Go for it, essentially. Go for it.
Essentially, go for it. Be realistic.
Yeah.
Get some good photography. And that's about it. Write lists.
Right, Liz, I love that. That's important. Oh, it has been wonderful spending time with you today. I'm thrilled to have this time with you. I'm thrilled that we get to share your story in our winter issue of What Women Create. I wish you all the best. I will be following everything you do. You are amazing and an inspiration, and you make it look so easy, Paula. You make it look easy.
Thank you very much. That's very kind words. Yeah. It's definitely not easy. It's hard work, but it's enjoyable. As I said, it doesn't feel like work, does it?
Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.